Welcome, everybody. This is Jackie Mitchell, your PM professor with Bench Talk, and I am excited, uber excited to have with me a special guest, Jamie Berger. Most of you know her as Berger with a Side of Code, and I'm just so excited to be talking with her today. So I'm going to try not to talk too much and let her tell her story, because I think she has a really great story and something that we all can connect with changing course and pivoting in our lives and in our careers and even those on an educational journey. So Jamie, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Right now, I'm a master's student at Michigan Technological University. It's super far north in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, so there's not too much diversity up here, which has kind of prompted my Instagram. Right. So when I first got an Instagram, I actually didn't want Instagram because I was like, oh, it's just pictures. Like, what could possibly be useful here? Right. And a friend of mine was just basically like, well, you know, I'm a gardener and like I have a large like community of people and we talk about seeds and whatever. I don't know. I don't garden. But but you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like maybe I can find something like that with tech. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that like I just found this huge like women in tech community. And I just like started following all of them. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. But even there wasn't like much diversity at all either. Right. So like I'm at this non-diverse school trying to like find cool like people in tech on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That's also not diverse. So I'm like, what's a fun way to like get more people like me like attracted to this page, and then I can like make new friends. Right. I mean, not that I wasn't making friends with the other girls too, but you know what I'm saying? Right, more friends, but more friends that also are like me. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about making like rap songs that had computer science context to them.
Right.
And I'm laughing because I probably would be really terrible at that.
So you explain that to someone? How did you explain that to somebody? Like, I'm gonna go on Instagram and I'm gonna code rap lyrics. Like, did they think you were totally crazy? Like, how did that
go? Okay, so that came from me wanting to turn rap songs into like computer science songs, and I was like, no, I'm gonna suck at that. So I went and changed it to coding rap lyrics. Right. Because when I was listening to songs, I noticed like you know, something 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 if something something something, and I was like, oh, if statement. And
you have to be really nerdy for that, and not nerdy in a bad way, because I'm such a nerd. Like, if you have ever taken computer science classes or any programming classes and you're really thinking that way, then yeah, you'll anything you look at, I'm like, oh, okay, that's an if statement, you know.
Okay.
Exactly. That's interesting. That's cute. That's so funny. But go ahead.
So I posted them for a while, and it was mostly just like my friends following me. Mm-hmm. And they aren't very computationally inclined. So
they didn't get it.
No. They were like, yeah, that thing you do is cool, but like we don't get it. And I'm like, thanks. Appreciate the support.
Right.
And so then finally, like, other tech people started looking at it, and they're like, oh, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, at least someone gets it. Right. So I just kept it going. And after a while, I think it was last February for Black History Month, every day that month, I posted about a different Black technologist. And I think that's actually when my page got more attention.
Okay.
That month. And then after that, people started like realizing like, oh, wow, she does these like funny rap lyrics to code things too. And I like that is kind of what made my page like blossom. And now more people like lyrics to code. It's not just like a few of my friends giving me likes.
Do you remember what your first one, what was your first one, whether it was online or offline, what that first one was?
Oh yeah, it's still my favorite one. It's Knuck If You Buck by Crime Mob. So it says, if buck, knuck.
I saw that. That's on your Instagram.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. I saw that, so I was scrolling all the way down. Yeah, I was laughing. And, you know, and when I saw it, I was like, does anyone else get this? You know, does anyone, because if you're reading, you could kind of put it together, but if you really know how to code and you're reading it, like, it just makes you laugh, because coding to me, and that's why I wasn't a programmer, is not necessarily fun. It really isn't necessarily fun. And being a project manager and working with developers and programmers, it's like, you know, they're not coding anything fun at all. They're like with accounting systems or whatever else it is that they're coding. But then when I'm reading it and when I came across your page, I was so tickled. I was so tickled. I was like, see, now she's making this fun. And even for younger people, you know, it's like, yeah, you can do so many different things. And I thought it was really cool. I thought it was really, really cool. So are you a big hip hop fan? And, you know, what's your flavor of music?
Let's see. I do like a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So I obviously really love rap music and hip hop and R&B. That's pretty much the majority of my lyrics to code. But I do have this special passion for like 90s boy bands.
Then I'm going to put in a request because...
I'm laughing because I'm embarrassed, but...
Don't be embarrassed. I think it's the 90s. I think I turned my son, I have a 10-year-old, onto... oh my gosh. Why did I forget the name of the group? The lyric that comes out, I Like It That Way. Oh my goodness.
Oh, I Want It That Way, Backstreet Boy?
There you go. That's me. That's my request. So if you could do something to that, then I'd love you forever.
Okay, let me write it down in my notes real quick. Seriously, I'll totally do it.
Oh my goodness. So okay. I'm laughing because I like 90s boy bands as well. Right?
That's perfect. So funny. I feel like everybody does. Mm-hmm. Like anybody who says otherwise, they're lying.
They're lying. You know, it's a guilty pleasure of theirs. You just don't want anyone to know, right?
Right. They're just trying to keep cool, save face.
That's funny. So let's kind of move into a couple of things. I want to really talk about your educational journey because I saw a post, one of the posts that made me really take notice and reach out to you was the post where you shifted gears, you know? So you're originally a PhD student. And you shifted gears and said, you know what, I'm going for my master's instead. But before you talk about that, I'm very interested because I see your Michigan Tech shirt. Yay, Michigan, right? I wanted to talk to something you spoke on very early on in our conversation was that you chose Michigan Tech. Not very diverse. Very curious on what made you choose that school.
Okay. So I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where University of Michigan is. So everybody's like, why don't you just go to Michigan? And I'm like, I lived there my entire life, you know? Right. So, but Michigan's also a really, really good school. So I feel like part of my stubbornness is kind of... prevented me from going there because I'm like, I need to venture out. Right. But it is a great school. And so when I was applying to graduate school, I didn't realize that if you plan on getting a PhD, it's really easy to go to grad school for free, just straight up. And yeah, so I didn't know that yet.
I still don't know that. Yeah. I still don't know. I wish I
could. A lot of people don't know that. So
could you give us a little bit of taste of how?
Yeah.
No, seriously.
Yes. As long as you have like a good understanding of like what research is and how you want to essentially make a broader impact on society mm-hmm. with that research, you're pretty much golden.
Got it.
Like I say that so casually, but it really is like that. You know, of course, like things like your grades in undergrad and stuff like that matter. Unfortunately, they still have the standardized GRE and stuff like that. But for me personally, on the GRE, I did really well in the math section mm-hmm. and the essay section. The other two are reading and vocabulary. I didn't do so well in those because mm-hmm. when I am timed to read something, I tend to forget exactly what I just read.
Right.
So, you know, like, I can admit, I honestly don't remember my score, but, like, it wasn't the best because, you know, I pretty much did good on two and kind of sucked at the other two. Mm-hmm. But being in a computer science program, this school is pretty much interested in, can I compute things and I express my thoughts in an educated way, which is basically the essay section. Because I can use a dictionary. I can look up words and figure all of that out. So they were okay with that. That didn't have to be perfect. It just had to look like, you know, I know at least my piece that I should know.
Right.
And then there's a ton of like fellowships and stuff like that that you can apply for.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say 3.0 mm-hmm. For our area of study, you know, do good in the math and the essay section of the GRE.
Right.
Oh, also have like some kind of extracurricular that you've done while in undergrad.
Right.
Or, you know, if you worked and did internships, of course, obviously, you know, bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have all that set up, it sounds like a lot and it is a lot, but you know,
it'll get you.
You're trying to not pay anything after all those undergrad fees. So that's where all of my loans are. But then you're pretty much set up to apply for a fellowship. And there's all kinds of fellowships out there. Some of them allow you to stack fellowships so you can have more than one and really have your things paid for.
Right.
I have the GEM fellowship. And so that allows me to go to school for free, mm-hmm. essentially, right now. I mean, yeah, I TA and things like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. What's that for free education, right?
Right.
And it's Wait. Free. So.
Right.
That's pretty much kind of like what sets you up. And then the fact that you have this goal of like getting a PhD, being an underrepresented minority helps as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
so when you got to Michigan Tech, did you know exactly freshman year, I want to go straight to, you know, getting my PhD, or was it, you know, let me get my bachelor's and then kind of figure it out?
Okay. So I didn't do my bachelor's at Michigan Tech.
Okay.
So I'm from Ann Arbor, but I did my bachelor's, well, I started at University of South Florida. So that's when I lived in Florida for 2 years.
Yeah. Okay.
But I realized it is way too hot. So I moved back to Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Michigan wouldn't accept a lot of the credits that I had taken from South Florida. So I actually transferred to Eastern Michigan. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, out of state is a lot of money.
Right.
So, transferred to Eastern Michigan. And, you know, I was kind of bummed because I was like, oh, I wanted to go to Michigan. But while I was at Eastern, I realized that that was, like, the best decision because my classes were a lot smaller.
Yeah.
I was a math major. So, within my math major at that school, they required me to take an intro to programming class. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got into programming, was with that.
Okay. And so your bachelor's is at Eastern?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So I was pretty much at the end of my math degree, so I didn't want to totally switch to computer science. Mm-hmm. So computer science, I made it my minor, and math was my major.
Got it.
And but with my first programming professor, her and I founded the Women in Computer Science Club at Eastern.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to be involved in like more, you know, computer science-y things that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then you decided from your bachelor's straight to PhD, or did you think about getting a master's? Like, what was that course of study decision for you?
So right after undergrad, I had a couple jobs that I had applied for and they wanted me, and I was in the negotiating process. But then I realized it's not exactly what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I ended up taking a 2-year long break, and I was just doing math tutoring in Ann Arbor. And I was just thinking about what I really wanted to do. And it turns out that, you know, I just wanted to go back to school, because I wasn't ready to just kind of have this like 9-to-5 job yet. Like I thought I had more to learn.
Okay.
So went back to school, and yeah, I pretty much just jumped right into the PhD program in computer science. Mm-hmm. And it was really difficult my first semester. And I thought I had to stay in Michigan because I didn't know that getting the PhD would have been basically free. So that's pretty much why I'm at Michigan Tech, is because I didn't want to go out of state because I thought I was going to have to pay for it. So I definitely wanted to stay in state, and I wanted to be at a really good school.
Right.
And Michigan Tech is that, especially since it is a technical school. You know, it's going to also put me around those kind of people. I've mentioned before that my friends aren't exactly like computationally inclined. So at Michigan Tech, I've been able to kind of like force myself into those pockets of people, because that's essentially all there is there.
Right. You know, you make a good point, because I have this thing, and I've been writing about it in the last few weeks, that, you know, where you want to go, where you, whatever you want to do, wherever you want to go professionally, personally, you really need to surround yourself with people who are already there or are on their way there. You know what I mean? Because that helps motivate you, helps keep you motivated, and helps to kind of keep your eye on the prize and focus, and gives you a little bit more clarity, because you can now see, oh, okay, this is a thing, and there are people doing this thing, whatever that thing is, and they're successful at it, and I can find mentors here, and I can, you know, they can help me navigate my way through whichever course you're taking. But I feel that, I believe that it's very important to surround yourself with people who are already there, or those who are on their way. So it's not saying to forget the friends that you have, but venture out. So whether that be, okay, now I'm going to the school and now I'm going to really embed myself with this group, it does a lot for you. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It's helped me out a lot, because even when I was at Eastern, I was still hanging out with, you know, my normal friends, because I was pretty much essentially back home. Mm-hmm. But coming to Tech, I've been like kind of removed away from all of my artsy fartsy friends. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in this more kind of conservative area, and especially on the campus, it's very like techy. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely forced me into maybe lunch conversations where I don't necessarily want to talk about technology and computer science, but other people do. So that kind of forces me to be able to speak technically with people and have fun doing it, like during a time like lunch,
right,
as opposed to just always thinking about it as like, oh, this is, I only, you know, do these things when I'm in school.
Right.
So it's kind of forced me to be more involved, if that
makes sense. Definitely makes sense. So what year were you, if we jump ahead a little bit, what year were you in, or are in, when you recently decided, you know, actually, let me take a step back. What made you decide PhD really wasn't the route to go? Because, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people say that, you know, that's the pinnacle. That's where it's at. You have your PhD. Mm-hmm. They can call you doctor. Your doors are open. Like, people think that it's this huge, grandiose, and I'm not taking anything away from having a PhD because it's a lot of work, definitely a lot of work. And it takes a special person to actually complete and get that. But what made you change course? What was your thought process, if you don't mind explaining what that was, to make you kind of shift and go the other way?
Right. So when I started the program, I really just wanted a PhD for two reasons. One, I wanted to be a professor. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just teach college kids. Mm-hmm. And the second one was I just wanted that notoriety, you know, Jamie Berger,
Dr. Berger,
Dr. Berger, you know,
I'd have everyone calling me doctor. I did everyone.
So I thought, you know, those two things are pretty motivating, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is my third year in graduate school.
Wow.
Okay. And this is the year, you know, just last semester, I told my department at the end of the semester that I want to get my master's. So how did I come up with that? Well, I had been TAing for a lot of courses and teaching labs and stuff like that.
So time out really quickly. For those who don't know, TA, teacher's assistant.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. I get it.
Yeah. Teacher's assistant. So you're not the professor of the class. I think the professor has to be, you know, an actual professor or some paid lecturer. Mm-hmm. But so graduate students are typically TAs, which are teaching assistants.
Right.
And so in this particular class, they have their regular class sessions, which are with the lecturer of the course, but then they have other sections throughout the week that are lab sections. Mm-hmm. So during lab, I'll usually like teach for a little bit and then do the lab assignment with everybody. Well, they do it and then I go around and check it and help out and that kind of thing.
Right.
It's not like a follow along. Mm-hmm. But so during lab, I realized that in the classroom, during class time, is the time where you see and connect with the students the most. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't really come to office hours until the end of the semester. So it's kind of hard to create a bond with the students when the only chance you get is during class time. Mm-hmm. 'Cause outside of class, or like maybe I'll see them in like the cafe area at lunch, you know, they kind of avoid eye contact, you know, they don't want to. Oh, no.
Yeah. I didn't change that paper.
Right.
I got an ask for an extension. Oh, no.
Exactly. So I started to realize that the connection with students wasn't as tight as I wanted it to be.
Okay.
For something that, like, I picture myself being happy in doing.
Right.
And then on the note of, like, research, I enjoy it, but I don't like the kind of like elitism that comes with it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, these
I people. understand where you're coming from with that. If you want to explain that a little bit for those who may not know what you mean.
Sure. So with research papers, to get them published, there's various tiers of like a conference that they can get accepted to. So, you know, there's the top tier where, like, you know, your paper would be famous and highly regarded and highly cited. And then there's like the lower tier papers where it's like, okay, good, you're published, but are people finding your paper? Are people citing it a bunch? That's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, especially with my research, I feel like research can be really good. mm-hmm. for communities of people. However, that's just not exactly the kind of lifestyle that I want. I really just love to teach. Right. Think about it. Like, I love creating curriculum. I love, finding new ways of explaining things to students, especially like there's always a couple who don't get it when you say it in class. But if you take an extra 10 minutes with them and explain it in their way, then they usually get it and they're like, oh, wow, you're a great teacher. Right. And I like that. Right. I like those interactions. And I know that when I was in high school, I always looked up to my teachers a lot, mm-hmm. especially you're at school pretty much all day, every day. mm-hmm. And so I was really thinking man, I know I want to teach, but probably not at the university level. So I decided that I wanted to be a high school teacher. And do I want to go through, this research elitism just to get a PhD before I do that? Or am I okay with, kind of turning off my ego a little bit, no more Dr. Berger, mm-hmm. and saying okay, I think I'll be pretty good with a master's, mm-hmm. With what I'd like to do. And, in my head, I also associated PhD with a lot of dollar signs. Am I okay seeing a couple zeros at the end disappear, mm-hmm. because of this decision, mm-hmm. of, me essentially just choosing to do something that's going to make me happier.
And let's talk about that, because it's really, yeah. really important for people to understand. You have to get real with yourself,
Yeah.
And what's my motivation for doing what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. Is it really for me? Is it for someone else? Is this motivation, the motivation to, let's say, get your PhD and be a professor, was that really something I wanted to do because at the core of who I am, it's who I am, So you really need to, and I tell people this all the time, you must get really real with yourself and have those conversations in your head, in your quiet space, have those conversations, tune out everyone else, everyone else's input, everyone else's opinion. And it's all about you, because you're living that life. You have to make those choices for yourself and these decisions. And it's such a personal thing. Mm-hmm. And it's you taking charge of your life and taking charge over your ego. I tell people a lot of times, because sometimes things that you're going after, it's not really what you want. It's your ego going yeah. after those things. And if you identify that and recognize that, you don't have to beat yourself up. You're not beating yourself up. It's just really getting true to being true to yourself, And authentically, this is me. And do I necessarily need those extra zeros at the end? And it's not to say that that may not come, but initially, what my motivation was is not what my motivation is right now, if I really look at who I am as at the core. And so that was when I saw your post, I was like, she got it. And I need to talk to her, because I think it would resonate with a lot of people, And some people who are on the fence, whether it's in their career, do I want to go to that next step, or do I want to move horizontally? What is it that's your motivation? You really have to get real and figure it out, Yeah. And take the time that you need, and don't worry about what other people think or say, because it's not their life, not their lives, it's yours. So I thought that was really important and really profound that you made that decision for yourself. And it sounds like you really gave it thought, because it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not easy at all. I mean, when I explained it a moment ago, it probably sounded like, and la da 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 da, it's easy, That's me, and it's not. This took a long time. So, pretty much summer through Thanksgiving break, I was bouncing back and forth in my brain. Mm-hmm. luckily, thanks to like conferences and things like that, I've gotten this really awesome group of Black women who have PhDs and masters, and they're doing their darn thing. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I was going to meet up with them for a weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of waiting until I'd meet with them in person to like tell them about my dilemma and kind of like clear it with them. Mm-hmm. So in that process, I made like a pros and cons list. Right. I had to ask myself a million times, am I quitting? Is that what I'm doing? Am I quitting right now? Like, you know, because when you make this decision, that's like, superficially, it sounds like you're going lower, right? From a PhD to a master's, superficially.
Right, right.
And so I had to like continuously ask myself, like, you know, am I wanting to do this because it's too hard? Or is this what I actually want to do? And that question bothered me a lot. It took me a long time to like get over that. And that's exactly that ego part that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. That's how it hit me. And the part that really, you know, kind of made me say, okay, I need to just follow through with this is I was getting nightmares.
Wow.
It sounds really strange.
Not to me, but it doesn't.
It was strange for me. I was like, oh my gosh, these are telling me something, because every nightmare I had was about like getting kidnapped. And I would eventually escape, mm-hmm. but the kidnapping was so consistent in just like many different forms of my dream. Mm-hmm. And you know how there's sometimes a dream where like you feel like you're a video game, so it's not really you. You're just kind of going through some sequence.
Yeah.
These felt like they were me. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what really, you know, caught my attention. And so I Googled, what do kidnapping dreams mean? Because this is starting to freak me out after a while. I'm like, can I get some peace when I sleep? This does not count. It's 8 hours of fear. This is not healthy. So I looked it up on Google, right? What do kidnapping dreams mean? And it means that you feel like you're stuck in a situation and you have no way out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, you know, I probably could have guessed that. That sounds pretty close to how I'm feeling. I think that's how you feel when you're kidnapped. So, you know, it totally made sense, right? And that like really even harder made me think about, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And
why are you doing pursuing the PhD?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Cause I used to be bummed out all the time. Like, you know, at least I'm going to get my PhD, but this sucks. You know,
at least at the end, you know, it'll pay off. But in the meantime, I'm going to cry in the corner.
Yeah. And I'm not willing to go through like 3 more years of that just for like a title that I think I need. Mm-hmm.
And so you're 2 years in.
So it would be like 3 years by the time I get my master's this summer.
Okay. And you made the choice. So when you told people outside of that group that you were just talking about, what was the reaction?
Sure. And
I would assume before the Instagram post, you know, those close to you kind of knew about it.
Oh, yeah. So, like, my friends and family were totally supportive. They were, like, especially when I told them, like, I want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. They were, like, oh, pff, that totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. Do it. Like, that's so you. And so that made me feel really good. You know, I didn't know what they were going to say. Mm-hmm. So, I really liked hearing that. Mm-hmm. They were just, like, you know, finally. And, my mom was like really excited. She was somebody who I was kind of worried about her opinion because, you know, I have 3 older brothers. So she kind of does the like comparative thing. And, you know, a couple of them are lawyers. So she's like, you should be a lawyer. And I'm like, no, computers, you know?
Right.
So I was like, you know, if I get my PhD, I'll be better than my brothers, you know? So I was worried about them. Yeah.
You're the youngest.
Oh, yeah. So I was worried about telling her that I want to, you know, get a master's. Mm-hmm. I thought she'd be like, you know, woman power, you need to get your PhD, because that's very much her personality.
Okay.
But she was actually really cool about it. She's like, yeah, you've been in school and thinking about school your entire life. Yeah, I'm 26. So she's like, you probably should learn what it's like to be in the real world. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm excited for you. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that she's tired of paying my phone bill, but.
Probably. As a mother, probably is like, okay.
Yeah.
Get it
together. She's excited to see me get into the real world. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's good that you had the support.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Telling the university was interesting. So your face, you're like, I know.
Different conversation, because they have a different motivation.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And they're like invested in me.
Absolutely.
Financially.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally understand that. I kind of started with the top and worked my way down. Looking back, maybe I wanted to do it the other way, but it was okay.
Yeah.
So I can talk about that a little bit too, if anybody wants to see what it's like to change. You know, I did it very respectfully, so that's what's good.
Right.
So first I went to the graduate school.
Right.
And asked them, okay, if I switch to a master's, how does that affect my funding? I was really afraid that I would have to pay back those first couple years for switching to a master's. So I was scared. I was like, mm-mm. I'll suffer those 3 years if you're going to make me pay it back. Right? That's a lot of money.
Right.
That I obviously don't have. Else I wouldn't have this worry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was essentially my goal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of turned into, well, we should have a meeting, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, whatever. So we have this meeting. And they're like, well, we'll wait for you to tell your department before we say anything. We just wanted to know what you were thinking, your motivation, blah, blah, blah. Luckily for everybody who I've talked to at school, when I've told them, you know, I'm changing because I want to just be a, not just be a, but I want to be a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually the moment when people are like, okay, I understand. I think that it seemed like a lot of the people were on the defense because they wanted to make sure it wasn't something that they did or a problem with the school.
Right.
That made me want to, you know, go to a master's.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when I told them, you know, this is a genuine career switch. Right. This is just a, you know, as Michelle Obama would say, a swerve.
Mm-hmm.
So them recognizing it as something like that, I think made it easier on them and actually honestly easier on me, because I didn't have people like begging me to stay.
Right.
It was more of like, okay, we understand, what do we have to do to make this change? So
they're helping you with the transition.
Right. Right.
Good.
Unfortunately they didn't wait to tell my department, so I got an email like, hey, you want to have a meeting? We're surprised. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But that meeting was okay. You know, at first they had the idea like, we're going to change your mind.
Uh-huh.
And then they did offer, you know, if I do change my mind, I can come back. So that was super nice.
Uh-huh.
But they were surprised. And you know, within rights, because I wish I could have told them first.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like, once again, as they realized that it was a career change, and I assured them, you know, one of them asked, well, is it because of the qualifying exams? And I was like, no. You know, I had to assure them that this isn't about my ability or inability to get a PhD.
Right.
I know I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is about me making a career change and something that I've been having nightmares about, you know?
Right. Something that's more than, you know, my ability. I know I have the ability and the confidence there. This is about me being happy
exactly.
in doing what I feel I need and want to do.
Exactly. Right?
And sometimes people, organizations, whoever, they take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. what did we do? You know, and then it turns into, what did you do? What are you not doing? Are you not good enough? You know what I mean? And some people get stuck there, and I'm glad that you didn't, that you really, you knew yourself enough to know, doesn't matter what they say, I'm doing this for me. It's, I'm not even going to question my ability. And that's, mm-hmm. that's really good. And yeah. I have to point out, because it is very similar to a conversation I had just recently with someone, about knowing who you are when you go into having conversations with upper management. So like we shift a little bit to career, mm-hmm. you have to know who you are, because so in order for you to not internalize what they say, if it's something a little bit negative or something that's air quotes trying you, right? You have to know who the heck you are. You know, and it's like, I don't care what you say. It doesn't matter what you say will not rub on me the wrong way where I will question my ability.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to dig deep and hold your ground. And before you even have those conversations, you better know, you have that inner confidence, you know, because if not, they will break you. They will eat you alive and make you walk away thinking, oh my God, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I shouldn't have this, that, or the other. But I really commend you on, at such a young age, I have to say, knowing yourself and being so self-aware. That's awesome. That's excellent.
Yeah. It's not easy, though.
But it's good.
Gotta throw that out there.
Because not a lot of young people are there, you know? Yeah. I don't know your full background, but I would tend to think that a lot of it has to do with who you put yourself around, because you have to kind of, so I have kids. I have a little one who plays basketball and he plays up, and my oldest, he's 23, 24 now, sorry. He always played up, meaning like if he was 8, he played with the 10-year-olds. If he's 10, he played with the 12-year-olds, right? So when you go into certain situations, I try to put myself in a situation where I have to play up, you know? Mm-hmm. That helps me build my confidence because I'm here for a reason. I need to know and understand that I'm here for a reason. And for me, Jackie, that helps my confidence. That's a confidence builder for me. And so it helps to ground me and to kind of armor me so that what other people, maybe outside of that group or whatever other people say and think, it means nothing. You know, it doesn't, I'm not going to let you sway my opinion. I'm not going to let you really get in my head because I know who I am, yeah. You know? So I commend you because it's not easy. No, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing because easily you could have really second guessed. It's like, well, maybe they were right. I don't know, you know, but you didn't do that. And so one of the things I want to ask you, touched on it slightly, but for you to define for yourself what success meant and means for you, because at one point, PhD, the glitz and glamour of that, you know, of what comes with that, and masters. I don't see it, for me personally, I don't see it as a step down. It's just, it's a different route, just a totally different route, and you can do different things with both. Just depending personally how you see what each title, you know, kind of means to you. So I would love for you to define what success looks like for you now. Like, what does that look like for you now?
Yeah, it's definitely different than before. Mm-hmm. and I would say now success for me is finding something that you're not just good at, but that you also enjoy doing. And finding a way to make yourself not just happy, but also lucrative off of that thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that that's kind of like the ultimate dream, because I always hear, you know, those like cheesy quotes of like, you know, you love your job when
when it doesn't feel like you're working. Okay.
You never work a day in your life, blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, these but, cheesy quotes. But then you're just like, wow, you know, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could do what you love and be able to sustain yourself. And that's important, you know.
Absolutely. And that's how I feel about teaching.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's something that makes me really happy. I enjoy doing it. It's a little bit of work, but when I'm doing it, it doesn't feel like work. It just feels like I'm doing something that comes naturally to me.
Right.
Which is really cool. It feels like it's what I'm meant to do. But it's also important that it does also make me money. Some amount of money to live off of, because especially being in graduate school, I've learned what it's like to not have much money. And you start to realize, you know, money isn't everything, but you know, it's a little important when you're trying to get through this life.
Right. No, I view money as a tool. You know, it's a tool. You know, yeah, we would like to have more money, but for what? For what? You know, really, what is your why with that? I mean, for me, it's a tool to help me help more people. You know what I mean? Now I can travel to help more people. I can do more face-to-face, more intensive, more, you know, right there type of a thing. But I look at it as a tool. It's not the end all be all. It's not, you know, I think when people go into certain things strictly for the money, that's when you become unhappy, you know, because you can have the most money and be so empty and so unhappy with what you're doing. So really shouldn't necessarily be a motivation or the only motivation, but it's just how you perceive money, because it's not a bad thing. Definitely isn't a bad thing. It's just how you perceive that. But I'm glad you defined success for yourself, and it's a personal conversation, you know, just like shifting and pivoting. It's a personal conversation and defining success. And I'm glad that you didn't look at moving from PhD to master's as failure, because it really isn't. To go as far as you have gone and where you are now, that definitely is not failure, because I understand that journey. Granted, I didn't do the PhD route, but I've, you know, I have a terminal degree, but it is a journey, and it's not easy at all. It takes a lot out of you, you know? So there are those times where you have to really sit and think. Even when I was doing my master's, it's like, should I even be doing this? You know what I mean? And for me at the time, I had a young family, and I chose the thing that helped me. I know this is not all about me, but the thing that helped me was having the ability to choose between thesis and non-thesis. And I said, okay, I'm not going to do thesis because I have a young family, and I knew if I would be doing thesis, I probably wouldn't be here right now. It was just way too much. You know, I probably would have been like in a mental institution, because it would be way too much. You have to know hate to say limitations, but you have to know what you can and cannot do, you know, and define certain things for yourself. But you definitely have gone through quite a bit going through the PhD program. And I have a few friends who have made it through. I say made it through because it's tough, you know, and just getting in and that journey in and of itself, it's tough. So to be in it and to understand, hey, you know what, maybe this is not where I need to be. I need to be somewhere else, and I'm going to move towards that something else and be happy there. And you never know, because you're still young, you know, maybe there's another shift coming. We don't know, you know what I'm saying? And it could be something totally different, but along the lines where it is still propelling you towards what your goals and your dreams are with, I'm going to go out on a limb, helping young people, right? Yeah. And so it's very different than teaching at a college level, high school. Very different.
Yeah.
Are your goals to stay in Michigan, or do you know yet? You're not sure.
Right now, I think I'd like to eventually land in Colorado.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome.
You know, enjoy the scenery.
So one of the last questions I wanted to ask you was, what's the most important lesson that you've learned so far on this journey?
Ooh. Good question. let's see. Listening to myself, like, especially with research, like I'm still doing research mm-hmm. as a master's student. And a lot of my research has to do with like qualitative traits mm-hmm. of like analyzing the situation and what's going on because it is an education. Mm-hmm. So something as simple as like asking kids, you know, how do you feel about computer science? They're going to probably say something that's not completely honest because I'm the one asking them.
Right.
So if I'm able to like watch their behaviors during like different activities and stuff, mm-hmm. that helps to find out how they're truly feeling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that kind of not just thinking about what your likes and dislikes are, but like analyzing your situation all the time, but not with, this is kind of weird to say, I'm not so good with words, but like not you looking at like your life from your body, like almost feel like you're somebody on the outside and you're watching you, because I tend to like, if I have a significant other, like my boyfriend, right? Mm-hmm. I'll watch him and, you know, give advice when I feel like I need to say something. Mm-hmm. I need to learn how to do that same thing for me, like be that person on the outside that's like watching me do my daily stuff and mm-hmm. you see little patterns and you're just like, okay, you should probably change this to make yourself happier. You know, recognize this. This is basically who you are. And I'm trying to say this without sounding cheesy, but like, recognizing like who you are and what your interests are is pretty much what I've learned the most in the past couple of years.
Right.
Because doing that has helped me to be not just more like myself, which is way easier, but people like you better too. Like when you know what you want and you know what your interests are and you know what you're confident in and you know what kind of people you want to surround yourself with. And if you're just upfront with people about your thoughts and feelings and all of that, mm-hmm. like things turn out for you way better
Absolutely.
Than doing what you think you need to do to satisfy somebody's, you know, whatever. So I think that's definitely the most important thing I've learned is to just like, analyze myself from the outside and just to find out what things I might not be noticing in my everyday practices, using that as a strategy to kind of see myself and analyze my life. And as I'm going through it, you know, what's good, what's bad, how are you dealing with it? Can you take that?
And it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
It's not something you do once and forget about it. You know?
Right. No.
Like, because you change. Yeah. We should be always changing and evolving because, you know, as humans, that's what we're supposed to do. You know, I have an issue with being stagnant. So I'm always looking at myself from the third person. That sounds crazy, but literally, I mean, this sounds really simple and basic. We're all individuals. So people will see you external to themselves and they will judge you external yeah. to themselves. If you can do that for yourself, I think that's a good thing. And that kind of goes along with what you're saying. So, mm-hmm. All right, let me look at myself as an individual outside of me, right? you have to do that sometimes. And you really have to kind of disconnect and be as objective as you possibly can be, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily hard on yourself, but just really objective. Like if you were your own best friend, what would you tell you?
Exactly.
yeah. right? In a loving way. In a loving way. Like, love yourself. What would you tell you in a loving way about the crap that you're doing, right? But no, I think that's really important. I think you are so self-aware. And again, I'm going to keep saying it. I hope you don't mind. At such a young age, it's really important to analyze and think about things. And a lot of people are not very analytical, but you don't have to be. It's just, you know, really get into knowing who you are and assessing where you are at any given point. You know, if you don't like something, speak up, whether it's speaking up to yourself, because, right. you know, I really don't like this. All right, speak up. What am I going to do about it? Am I going to continue to complain, or am I just going to just sit in it, or am I going to make a change? And you don't necessarily have to drastically change your life. It could be just small things to shift you in a different direction, or a different action, whatever the case may be. But that was really good. I really, really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed talking with you. I love your smile. I wish you guys could see her smile. She has a beautiful smile. Check out her Instagram. But before we wrap up, I like to close with the, I don't know if you've thought of anything, but I mean, I don't know. So close with the ask the coach, you know, anything you want. Hopefully I have an answer. So I like to close with ask the coach. And if you have a question for me, shoot.
Okay. Let's see. Ask the coach. So I guess like the main question, okay, so you know I'm like looking for jobs right now and things like that. So there's jobs in education technology that I think I'd really enjoy. Basically anything that involves, you know, teaching, because that's where all of my experience is at and that's what I enjoy doing. The reason I'm trying to get a job for a couple years is to just make money while I earn a teaching certificate, because you have to have one of those to teach K-12 in whatever state you plan on being in. Right. Very specific. So I'm like, I might as well be making money during this time. So that's pretty much my goal for like the next 2 years, is to essentially just make money. But if I can do it with something that I want to do, then that would be obviously preferred. But I'm also open to doing some kind of like software engineering job. So like a, you know, back-end development, or something in a data analyst route, because I do really enjoy data. But for those two kind of jobs, since I don't have any industry experience right now, makes it, yep.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was like, no.
When people say that, but go ahead. Well, I'll address that.
So I'm just worried that it's going to be harder for me to find a job that has a role that I feel like I should be in, having completed a master's degree by that point. But sometimes it seems like a lot of companies are like, oh, you don't have any industry experience, then you should, you know, go through our internship program first. And it's like, dude, I got my master's degree. I've been interning my entire life. Like,
right. Okay.
Please. Like, I don't really know, like, what to do when, first off, people say that. Or second off, like, what companies out there are going to be, I don't know, what I would consider respective of my degree.
That question I get very often in different forms.
Okay.
And I'm excited to answer that here.
Okay.
Because one, you have experience. Two, don't let anyone tell you you don't have, and I'm doing air quotes, quote unquote, industry experience. Three, your master's degree does mean something. And it's debated with me on why I chose someone over someone else, right? For me personally, when I'm looking at resumes, and not even just me personally, I'm in the room when in different organizations, when these conversations are had, well, this person went to school, this one didn't go to school, but this one has a little bit of experience and this one doesn't. I always go back to their confidence in the interview, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And I tell my clients all the time, you own the interview. I don't own that interview. You own the interview. You know why you own the interview? Because you, it's your forum to tell me what you think I need to know.
Okay.
So never, ever, ever focus on what you don't have. Build up everything that you do have. And mm-hmm. I would challenge, and just what you said, I would say it, but in a little bit more professional way. Mm-hmm. I would, someone who says to you, you don't have industry experience, in what you do as a PhD student, number one, because you've been a PhD student, the coursework that you've had, the research that you've had, the experience to just do that in and of itself, the background that you have for computer science and the programming skills that you have is enough to bring into any organization and you can hit the ground running. What you may not, what they may feel that you may not have is the organizational knowledge, which can be taught.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Internship, you are way beyond that. That's an insult.
Yeah.
You're totally far beyond that. So play up the, this is what I've done. Right. And this is what I can do. And this is what I can do for you. Oh, you need a Java programmer? I got that. And here's some samples, you know, data analytics, know how to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, you know, you work for a university, right? So your experience is on that level, right? Mm-hmm. So you may not come in as a senior developer or lead, but you definitely have what it takes to go in and hit the ground running with, if you're looking for a programming job or data analytics or anything like that, big data, definitely you have the experience for that. You may not have, and like, again, I'm gonna say it again, you may not have what they're thinking as industry, really code word for organizational experience. How do you fit into the organization? You know, so a lot of times they're interviewing, looking for how does this person fit with our team, you know? But if you go in talking about what you can do for them based on what you have done, you know, not necessarily saying, well, in the classroom of this and that and the other. I've worked on projects where I had to develop this because you're working on projects, right? Yeah. Make it project-based. You get what I'm saying? And your resume should look just like that. It's okay. Project-based, you know? Mm-hmm. I've worked on this. I've been able to do that. These are the things, these are the languages that I know. These are the things that I know how to code. These are the things that I know what to do. It's not difficult. It is so not difficult. And don't let anyone tell you that it is. It's a matter of presenting yourself as a professional. Mm-hmm. And with the confidence that you can talk to them. You know what is so funny? When I'm, a lot of times I don't necessarily interview the development team per se, but mm-hmm. I'll sit in on those interviews and I'll ask more of the behavioral questions. You know, how do they fit in with the team or, you know, whatever. Let's just have a conversation. It's more a conversation than an interview. But what I do, I'm watching and I'm listening, and the people who really get through, not necessarily those with, you know, oh, they work for Facebook or they work for this, that company, whatever. It's the folks who are specific on what they can do for you based on their knowledge of whatever it is that they're looking for. So if you see it, an ad or something, you know, for a specific position, what exactly are they looking for? And you can find out more so in the interview. What are your pain points? You know, what do you need this person to bring? 9.9 times out of 10, they're looking for fresh eyes because they have the stale, those who've been there for so many years, and they don't have that fresh face, those fresh, you know, someone who's learned so many different things to bring that fresh view to what they're trying to do. So okay. What I would leave you with, and we can have a conversation offline with this. We could definitely have a conversation offline. What I would leave you with is confidence, mm-hmm. knowing that what you have done to get to where you are, what you know, what play up what you know and speak mm-hmm. to those things and show your value in what you can bring to them. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even worry about, oh, I don't have industry experience. Okay. That would be the furthest thing from my mind. Like you walk in there like, I got this because I know how to do that. Okay. I know how to make a web page. I know how to, you know, whatever the case may be. I know how to work on your BI project. I know, you know, ETL. I know how to do ETL. What, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? As long as you have that confidence and you can speak the language of that specific thing that they're looking for, mm-hmm. you should be good. There are, and I wouldn't say that there aren't those out there that are strictly looking for, you know, the 7 years experience. I wouldn't necessarily go for those, but, and I wouldn't go for internships and not necessarily junior positions, because I think you're past that, you know, and keep hitting those, you know, this is what I've done. This is what I've done. This is what I've done. And you can formulate your resume in such a way where it's not highlighting, no, I have not worked at X, Y, and Z company. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry about it. Really highlight where you are, what you've done, and what you can do. I think it's a little easier in tech. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit easier in tech to get in without necessarily having been in so many different places. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little easier.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I love that question because I get that very often, not necessarily about tech, but, oh, I don't have the experience. I don't have the experience. I said, well, what do you have experience in? So let's, you know, before we even look at a resume, let's talk about what you have experience in. List mm-hmm. everything, absolutely everything that you know how to do. And then we build from there. Just kind okay. of put it in a way that you show your value. So I have this thing called your value statement, and you're really just, this is my value. This is the value that I bring to you based mm-hmm. on what it is that you need. Here's the value. And once, you know, you get with the right people, they'll see that. And it's about branding yourself. And it's funny, but not funny. I think you're in a really great position because you've branded yourself already. Whether you realize it or not, you know, with personality and everything like that on Instagram, I think you can branch out a little bit in other places. Before okay. we leave, I have a question for you. Do you have a LinkedIn profile?
Yeah, I do.
You do? Yeah. Did you build that out?
How do you mean?
So does it list, you know, the things that you do, what you're looking for, anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I think okay. so. Yeah, I think okay. it should have most stuff in there.
Okay. Have you connected with different people, like a good network?
Yeah, I feel like most of the people I've connected for work has actually been on Instagram, which is pretty interesting. So people like hear about me through there and then add me on LinkedIn.
Okay. Okay.
And then they see more of like what I actually do.
Right. Okay. Okay. Instagram is a little fun and here's the real stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's cool. But I hope I answered your question. That was a really cool question. I try to tell people to just, you know, when I get that, play up your strengths, you know, mm-hmm. don't get intimidated that they need 7 years and no, you don't. You don't. Sometimes they put that 7, 10, I've even seen 15 years, more so about ageism. It's like, you should, okay. that's a no-no, you know, it's a protected class. You shouldn't really be doing that. But I ignore that. And I still go for them. Still go for them. Don't let that deter you, but you are not intern. You're far from it. You're okay. not entry level. You're far from it, you know? Okay. So yeah. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. I hope you had fun. I had fun. Yeah. I learned a lot from you.
Cool.
I learned so much from you. This was really awesome. Tell people how they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Berger, but spelled with an E. So it's B-E-R-G-E-R with a side of code. And that's all one word. So it's kind of like burger with a side of Coke, but, you know, burger with a side of code.
I love that. I love that. That's awesome. Okay. So we will definitely be looking out, especially me, for Backstreet Boys. I need to see that. I'm excited. But no, I love your page. I really love your IG stories. I made a comment to somebody, I don't remember who, one day I was like, she gives zero F's when she's doing those stories because she some of the things that I've seen you say and heard you say, I'm like, okay, all right. She doesn't care. I love your personality. Like, I love your, it's not like you're so far off, but I mean, yeah. Like there's certain things that you'll say about race or what have you that, you know, it's real. It's like, it's a real thing. And I'm sometimes for me, I'm like, uh-oh, is she okay with saying that? She's a PhD student. Is she okay?
It's okay. Actually, the school like totally supports my Instagram and everything.
Cause I'm told you did one and I was like, I'm scared for her.
Most people are actually really cool about everything.
That's good. Yeah. So no, that's awesome. So for those who would love to follow Miss Jeannie here, Berger with a side of code, I will definitely put your links and everything in the show notes and everyone will have that. So this was wonderful. I really, really enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks. And again, would love to connect again because I would love to see, you know, how your journey is definitely going and your master's journey. You have how many more years to get your master's?
I should be done this summer.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm excited for you. Like, this is exciting. This is so exciting. So we have to reconnect. Okay. Definitely following your journey because it's very inspirational to a lot of us, not just women of color, but just women in general, because we are so underrepresented in this IT field still to this day. I can count on my fingers when I go into organizations how many women there are in IT.
Wow.
And it's not a lot. You know, those who are actually in IT doing, you know, and not to take anything away from admins, I'm not taking that away from them, but those who are developers or project managers, business analysts, quality assurance, those types of roles.
Yeah.
It's sad. But we're getting there. We're getting there, you know, definitely getting there. And you will be teaching the young soon, you know, so hopefully more of us will be in those positions and making decisions, right?
Yeah, all my students.
Awesome. So Jamie, again, it was awesome speaking with you and we will definitely connect again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining me today on Bench Talk, the place where we talk about life, career, and everything in between.